Morning. First case of the morning will be Lori Cragen versus Wisconsin Department of Corrections. Ms. Cannelli.
May it please the court. I represent the plaintiff appellant, Lori Cragen, who appeals the district court's decision granting summary judgment on her retaliation claim brought under the First Amendment. The district court correctly ruled that Ms. Cragen's speech on issues of prison security and officer safety were constitutionally protected, but the court then erred in holding that this protected speech was not a substantial or motivating factor in the termination of her employment as a correctional officer at the Green Bay Maximum Security Prison. Ms. Cragen was terminated on February 6, 2002, after she complained to her union representative, Chad Frappier, that Captain Schultz had again breached prison policy by failing to ensure that there were 10 officers assigned to supervise the inmates.
Was the union rep an employee?
Yes. He was a correctional officer as well and worked with Officer Cragen on second shift. Ms. Cragen told Officer Frappier that this practice was not safe, and she stated to him, quote, "The union should start filing grievances with Madison because Green Bay Correctional Institution did not seem to care about officer safety." Captain Schultz overheard this conversation.
You know, I don't want to interrupt you unnecessarily, but we've read all the briefs. If you want to recite the facts again in detail, you may, of course, but I mean, it's not necessary.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly then. After hearing Officer Cragen complained to Officer Frappier about the short staffing, it was Captain Schultz who then drafted a disciplinary report charging Ms. Cragen with abusive behavior toward her union representative. A cursory investigation ensued, and then Ms. Cragen was terminated for the abusive and demeaning manner in which she had raised security concerns. Under basic principles of summary judgment, disputes of fact and the inferences to be drawn from them must be resolved in favor of the party opposing the motion. In granting summary judgment, the district court disregarded these basic principles and accepted as proven fact defendant's self-serving representations that Cragen had behaved inappropriately toward Officer Frappier and ignored all of Cragen's contrary evidence, including Officer Frappier's own statement submitted to management at Green Bay Correctional Institution, wherein he stated that he had worked with Officer Cragen for well over a year, that they got along very well, and that she had never done anything to harass him, including the harassment that was alleged in Captain Schultz's report.
Now, is he the union rep?
Yes.
Now, as far as the matters of public concern, are you saying that she expressed those, I guess, outside the workplace or something, that because he was the union rep, that was more going public with it as opposed to just some sort of internal griping?
It's our contention that it was a matter of public concern.
Oh, sure. There are a lot of things that could be a matter of public concern, but the question is, do you have to express it a matter of public concern, or you're just talking among yourselves about something? Is there a difference?
I think it's one factor that's considered, but the fact that the speech has been raised in the context of an employee's responsibilities as a correctional officer does not deprive the speech of its protected conduct. And especially here, where she's talking to a union representative, I believe that there are First Amendment cases that actually grant protection to that type of speech, to union activity. In addition to the content, the activity itself would have been protected. There were also statements drafted by a number of other officers that confirmed that Officer Cragen had not behaved inappropriately, and that it was in fact Captain Schultz who had behaved inappropriately towards her by yelling at her in the rotunda in front of other officers. In crediting defendant's account of what transpired, the district court relied upon the Supreme Court's plurality decision in Waters versus Churchill for the proposition that deference is owed to the government employer. Waters, however, addressed only the very narrow question of whether the first prong of the Connick v. Myers test for determining whether speech was protected should be applied to what the government employer thought was said or to what the trier of fact ultimately determines to have been said. Here, there was no question about the content of Saigon's protected speech. As part of the summary judgment procedure, plaintiffs submitted a set of proposed facts, and in particular, proposed facts numbers 110 through 113 specifically described what she said on that day about staffing in the cafeteria, and the defendants answered those proposed facts with the statement, undisputed. There is no dispute that she was speaking out about security staffing on that day. So Waters is not applicable.
The termination was the fourth, or fifth, actually, disciplinary action taken against her, wasn't it not?
That's correct.
Is there any claim that the other matters were issues of public concern?
There was an allegation made in the district court below that she had been disciplined progressively in retaliation for her speaking out because she had, in fact, addressed these issues of staffing in the cafeteria on numerous occasions with management. I have not pursued that issue on appeal because under the progressive discipline policy at the Department of Corrections, it would have taken this last incident involving the situation in the rotunda with Captain Schultz for her to have been terminated. She was not being considered for termination until this occurred, and so it was, in effect, a but-for cause of her termination. Waters did not address the issue of causation, as even the district court acknowledged, and neither the district court nor the defendants in their reply brief have cited any cases that support using Waters versus Churchill in deciding the issue of causation. The issue of causation is an inherently factual question which should be resolved by a jury. Applying Waters to the issue of causation and accepting as proven fact a government employer's asserted justification for an adverse employment action would immunize even the most retaliatory actions and effectively chill the exercise of employee free speech. When Saigon spoke out about Captain Schultz's breach of the staffing policy, her concerns about prison security and officer safety were very real. She had, just 2 weeks earlier, herself been injured as a direct result of the defendant's failure to have properly staffed the cafeteria on that day. There should have been two officers monitoring the hallway. And in the course of breaking up an inmate fight, Ms. Saigon, by virtue of the fact that she was staffing the hallway area alone as the inmates were returning from their meal time, was punched in the face, breaking up a fight. Other officers were as concerned about this issue. This court has recognized the important role that whistleblowers play in bringing government mismanagement and wrongdoing to light. Saigon was performing this important role when she spoke out about the defendant's failure to abide by their own policies and properly staff the cafeteria as required by prison policy.
Now, speaking out again, this is exactly the question. She spoke to the union representative, the co-worker. And was the secretary or something, somebody else that was a higher up supervisor, secretary or something like that? Some man, he was secretary of the prisons or something?
Oh, he was the captain or the ship commander, Captain Schultz.
I thought it was a higher person that just came in from, I don't know where.
Oh,
from Madison.
Okay. I've been focusing at least my argument on the incident in the cafeteria.
I know you have, but I'm trying to get outside the prison
sure.
A little bit to see, because you know, there's stuff going on all the time. People complain, hey, no, we didn't show up. And they may not show up because I got to work harder, or didn't show up because there are only 8 people instead of 10.
That wasn't the issue here, though, because this particular policy, a copy of which is in the appendix to the brief, says that you will not start meal until there are 10 officers present. And if 10 aren't available because someone who usually stands that position is absent, they're supposed to pull from other positions in the facility. That's how important they deem this policy to be.
So what did she do as a whistleblower? You just referred to her as a whistleblower.
She was urging her union representative to file a grievance with Madison, and he did, in fact, then file that grievance on January 10th,
okay,
describing this situation in the cafeteria.
Okay.
And in addition to this particular event, which was the basis for her termination, discussing the issue of causation, and that's why I'm focusing on it, it was the reason given for her termination. Ms. Saigon had also spoken out about Mr. Erickson and Mr. Schultz's failure to properly handle an inmate disturbance, and she addressed this complaint to Deputy Warden Bainan on January 20th. And several days later, she also spoke with the Secretary of the Department of Corrections, Mr. Litcher, who was touring the facility as a result of a riot that had occurred 1 week earlier. And she spoke to him at that time about her concerns. 1 day later, after speaking to Mr. Litcher, Deputy Warden Bainan comes up to her and tells her, they pulled your number, and that she should just learn to keep her mouth shut because all she does is cause trouble. And while the district court said that this was a warning about her discipline, the events that had occurred immediately prior to that undercut that assertion. What she had been doing before that was actually speaking out in a manner the defendants themselves claim was entirely appropriate in terms of her complaints to both Litcher and to Bainan earlier that week.
One of the, except some of those things, the prior incidents involved not opening a,
right,
Randomly opening a gate for somebody or something.
Correct. And she received a 2-day suspension for that. There had been other officers that had engaged in similar activity or conduct, had not been written up for it. And in any event, she didn't lose her job over that incident. And we're here because she lost her job. The defendant's actions in terminating Ms. Saigon's employment violated her rights to free speech. And we therefore respectfully request that the district court that the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of the individual defendants. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Sweeney?
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is John Sweeney. I represent the individually named defendants in this action. I represented them at the district court level also. To address your question, Judge Mannion, in the brief communication with John Litcher, who was the Secretary of the Department of Corrections, it's undisputed that Ms. Saigon did present to him a list of her concerns. That took place on the 20th of January, the year 2002, at which time, in plaintiff agrees with this, the recommendation for termination was in the pipeline to Madison. Our proposed finding of fact, I believe it's number 145, with which the plaintiff agrees, establishes that fact without contradiction. And so that, in a sense, speaking out to Mr. Litcher, which was protected, and also conversations with the deputy warden, also took place after the time that the memo was sent to Madison recommending her termination. As at the district court, the plaintiff, Ms. Saigon, places her emphasis on the incident January 8, 2002 in the rotunda. She has recited the boilerplate, the security and safety concern, which very often district court judges automatically assume that that is a matter of public interest. As we've said in our brief, and I won't belabor it here, we question whether or not she was acting out of personal interest or having just recited public security and safety, we don't believe that's enough for protection. However, there's never been a dispute that the manner or the method in which Ms. Saigon used to express her concerns, particularly focus on the incident January 8th in the rotunda, in which, whether she used profanity or not, Ms. Saigon admits that she was yelling, that she was loud, there were inmates present. That is not a protected method of speech, and that is what concerned the supervising officers. As I said, Ms. Saigon focuses on that event, January 8, 2002, and said without that incident, there would have been no termination. Well, maybe, perhaps that's true, had that incident never occurred. But if we look at the letter of termination, which the Ms. Saigon has ignored, it's in the Appendix 49, the appellate appendix, it is very clear that the incident on January 8, 2002 was the final straw following, as you suggested, Your Honor, one reprimand and three previous suspensions. This was the straw that broke the camel's back. Shortly thereafter, the personnel manager sent a memo to Madison requesting permissions to terminate. It's not enough simply to focus on that January 8th incident in which Ms. Saigon was yelling in the rotunda in the presence of inmates. As Judge Griesbach pointed out, her alleged public concerns were very vague and unspecific as to time. The court found, and the record is clear, that at best she made some expressions of her concern starting in late 2000. 2002, she was terminated. As Judge Griesbach found, there's no temporal sequence here that would suggest there's any timing expressing or demonstrating retaliation. The record has no evidence at all, Your Honors, which show that any of the named defendants or any personnel for corrections at any point in time were upset over the concerns that Ms. Saigon may have expressed to them. They were basic concerns, as you've suggested, that there are always complaints, particularly in a correctional institution, morale, training, safety, and public concern. There's no doubt about that. But there's nothing to indicate that any of the named defendants, from John Litcher to the lowest officer named in this complaint, was upset with what Lori Saigon was saying. As the supervising officer expressed in the January 8, 2002 incident, and as the personnel manager expressed, it's not what you said, it's how you say it. The supervising officer said, take that conversation in the other room. That's not a conversation that takes place in front of inmates. Also, as the district court judge found, and as we've argued to the court, there's no direct causal link between any of the times Ms. Saigon allegedly spoke out on public security and safety leading to the termination. Nor is there any evidence that any of the prior incidents in which she was suspended three times or reprimanded were based on the fact that she had expressed properly public concerns and safety. At the district court, Ms. Saigon challenged the due process that she received, and as she said, she's not pursuing that here in this court. And it's fair to say that she had adequate due process for the reprimand, for the three suspensions. She had a pre-termination meeting, and all of that goes to show that the process, whether we apply Waters, whether we apply whatever particular standard, says it's the plaintiff's burden to present evidence of a causal link from her speech to the defendant's action. And there's nothing. There's nothing of that. Her efforts to prove pretext, as Judge Griesbach correctly pointed out, also fail because of a lack of evidence. She's not come forward to say that Ms. Saigon was terminated for any other reason except those reasons expressed here in the termination letter. A series of disciplines January 8th simply being the last of those. There's no evidence that any of the defendants were concerned at all because one of the correctional officers talked about public security and public safety. In fact, as Ms. Saigon has said and as we've said, those are primary issues in any correctional setting, and anyone who would not be in favor of that would not be doing their jobs. And there's no evidence that Ms. Saigon has discussed that, say, Mr. Litcher or any of the other correctional personnel were upset. In fact, they were strongly in favor of public safety and security in the correctional institution. And I think the basic, one of Ms. Saigon's basic errors is focusing on only on the January 9th incident, and it's very clear that the method of her speaking out on that particular day, excuse me, I think I misspoke, it's the January 8th incident, there's no evidence that anything that was said that day, file a grievance or whatever, was inappropriate. But you do not engage in conduct like that in front of inmates, you do not yell, and that is not a protected method of expressing your concern. There are legitimate ways of expressing those concerns, and Ms. Saigon always had the opportunity to pursue the union grievances, and she did on occasion speak with management at Green Bay Correctional. Those were the appropriate ways. Her problem was not what she said, but how she said it, and that was evidenced going back as far as 1998, when her supervisor indicated that she had problems relating to other officers. And it was that basic problem, the way she related with other officers and other correctional personnel, and not her First Amendment concerns, that resulted in her termination. If you have no further questions, I'll take my seat. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Connelly?
2 minutes.
I'd like to address Mr. Sweeney's statement that the decision to terminate was made as of January 16th when the recommendation was sent to Madison. There is testimony by Deputy Warden Bainan that when he spoke to Ms. Saigon on January 30th, after the conversation with Mr. Litcher, when he spoke to her on January 30th, the decision, the final decision to terminate, had not been made. And we cite the page of that in our brief.
Wasn't it he wasn't aware of it, or it had not been made?
He said that it had not been made. That was his testimony in the deposition. It was his deposition on pages 66 through 67. And also, Mr. Sweeney alleged that there were...
I think Mr. Sweeney said that the letter requesting permission to fire her was sent before.
It was sent by Madison.
Yeah, he didn't say she was fired. He said the letter requesting permission to fire her had been sent.
Correct. But the final decision to terminate.
He didn't say it was. Okay.
Yeah, I misspoke. Thank you. And the allegation that there were no inmates present, that's disputed. And actually, Captain Schultz admitted that there were no inmates present in the rotunda. He had just walked them back to their cell hall, and he was coming back from walking the inmates back to the cell hall. There were no inmates present. That's also established by the statements of the officers and also the affidavit of Chad Frappier that was submitted as a part of the summary judgment motion. Mr. Sweeney said that she was fired not for what she said but how she said it. Well, there are disputes, clearly disputes of fact, as to how she said what she said. She said she yelled. She explained when she said she yelled, she was speaking loudly because it's a large rotunda area, and Officer Frappier was a distance away from her. She wasn't yelling at him. She was speaking in a raised voice so they could hear each other. But she was not engaging in any of the other conduct they claimed. She was not swearing, and she was not abusing him because he wrote a statement saying, I was not abused. I get along with Officer Saigon.
Before you go any farther, look at the light.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thanks very much, both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.